Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Opponent chose his running mate, the ideological leader of the Republicans in Congress, Mr. Paul Ryan. And I want to congratulate... No. Look, I want to congratulate Congressman Ryan. I know him. He's an articulate spokesman for Governor Romney's vision. But it's a vision that I fundamentally disagree with.
Well, that's the case. Ladies and gentlemen, Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. And thank you, Michael, again for lending me your microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a race. We've got Paul Ryan now added to the Mitt Romney ticket, and the Democrats are going crazy. I think they're a little bit scared. We're going to be talking a lot about that today. We've also got to talk about the Fast and Furious lawsuit. Daryl Issa, the chairman of the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, filed a lawsuit to enforce the contempt citation against Eric Holder and try to compel the Justice Department to produce the documents they refused to do on the Fast and Furious program. Also, a lot of rumors out there. A lot of chatter about Israel. Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, said, well, you know, the Iran sanctions have failed. A lot of people are saying this means the Israelis are getting ready to strike Iran militarily, maybe before the November election. Obama has been trying to pressure them to not do it. Last and not least, and we're going to be talking a lot about this today, the Super PAC ads. Is there a problem out there? Obviously there is. There's the septic ad. You know all. We've talked about that for weeks now, about the man basically accusing Mitt Romney of killing his wife by causing her cancer. And the fact that, well, the Democrats and Obama are saying, well, we're not connected to that. That's not our problem. I have a solution to the Super PAC problem. All right, let's get back to the first big issue of the day. 800-449-8255, the Michael Savage Show. Let's talk about Paul Ryan. Now, in Saturday's choice, Mr. Romney made, I think, a pretty good selection. Now, there's a lot of people who would disagree with me, and I'll hear from them today, I'm sure. Well, you're welcome to call in. But the point of the matter is here, this is perhaps an inevitable choice for Mitt Romney. You had the Obama people, the Democrats, Obama himself, Joe Biden. Oh, gosh, I wish we had a Joey Biden moment today, but we might not have enough audio on Joe. Anyway, they've been all saying, well, the big Ryan budget plan, that was going to be a big issue this year. And they've been beating up on Paul Ryan again and again and again. Well, you know, the basic point here is if you're going to be having to face that issue, and the Ryan budget is going to be a good issue simply because, as Obama said, Ryan is the ideological leader of the Republican Party, this is a case where why not have the guy who wrote the plan not only on the ticket to defend it, but to be able to take the battle to the Democrats? There's a lot of things that are going to be going on Social Security, on Medicare, on Obamacare, all of these big issues on the economic side of the campaign. Who better than Paul Ryan to be on there? He is an ideological leader, just as Obama said. And the one thing that we have not had before today, or before Saturday, when Mitt Romney announced the choice, we really didn't have an ideological race. And if you look at history, ladies and gentlemen, the Republicans win when they have an ideological candidate. And the ideological candidate makes Americans choose a real choice, not just a choice between the lesser of two evils, a choice between one philosophy and another. We've now, very clearly, we've been beaten to death with Obama's philosophy for the past 4 years. We know he's a big government liberal, a spender, someone who is not really connected to American values. Now Paul Ryan is there. And he's going to be able to make arguments, I think, differently and perhaps better than Mitt Romney could have by himself. One of the things that really makes this guy attractive to me is his debate skills. Try to say that fast. The basic point is his debate skills are very, very sharp. And he's not afraid to take people on. I don't know if you remember, but about 2 years ago, it was February, or no, it was August of 2011. I'm sorry, I've got my dates here. I've got three different dates on three different pages, Jed. Get yourself organized. The big deal of the Blair House Summit meeting. The Blair House Summit meeting where Obama got a bunch of Republicans together, and he sat there. This is February of 2010. I'm sorry, February of 2010, the Blair House Summit on Obamacare. And Obama and Biden, well, Obama first, you have to remember, he was sitting there as the chairman of the meeting, the big man who was going to call on these minions who came from the Republican Party. And he was going to say, well, all right, you guys can maybe talk a little bit. And Joe Biden was laughing and poking fun at the Republicans. And Biden was even saying that the Republicans don't have a right to say that they represent Americans, because they don't. Well, this is Paul Ryan in February 2010. This is the man who can really take it to him. Now, listen to this one clip here. Ryan going right at Obama and right at Ryan, at Biden. Ryan Summit 04, please, guys.
I'll just simply say this, and I respectfully disagree with the vice president about what the American people are or are not saying, or whether we're qualified to speak on their behalf. So we are all representatives of the American people. We all do town hall meetings. We all talk to our constituents. And I've got to tell you, the American people are engaged. And if you think they want a government takeover of healthcare, I would respectfully submit you're not listening to them.
And that was Ryan going right at Obama. And he was right. He was perfectly correct then. Obama wasn't listening. He was listening to the people at AARP who wanted to benefit from the Obamacare business. They wanted to talk about, you know, the basic people who were supporting Obamacare. Some of the unions, the very most radical liberals, that's all he was listening to. And, you know, there you had a relatively junior congressman. Well, he's been in Congress for six or seven terms, but a relatively junior guy compared to the president of the United States, taking it right to him. I think that's a big strength, and I think Paul Ryan brings that to the ticket. Now, you really see, too, what's going to happen in this campaign. And Paul Ryan being on the ticket, he is an ideological choice. He is someone who scares the Democrats quite a bit, I think. And as a result, what they're doing right now, it didn't take them more than a couple of hours after Romney made that choice, announced the choice on Saturday. And the basic point here is they went after Ryan consistently, immediately, and they're still doing it now. I've just been watching, unfortunately, CNN for a while, and they're talking about how Ryan is going to be toxic in Florida. Oh, the big headlines. Oh, the big scare. The senior citizens are going to be thrown out in the streets. Well, let's just set the record straight. And that's what I want to spend a good bit of time in this half hour and talk to you about just what the facts are. Because what you're going to hear is not the truth. What you're going to be hearing from people is, well, Ryan's plan would just gut Social Security and it'll transform everything. Our senior citizens are going to be hurt. It's going to add to the deficit. All of these things that you're going to be hearing about that, it's just not true. Let's go through one more point. Before I get to the details of that, one big point that you've got to realize here, we're finally going to have a debate, I think, if the Democrats will finally surrender to the momentum of this campaign. The momentum is now gathering behind a serious discussion. Oh, the Democrats always want to have a serious discussion, ladies and gentlemen. They want to sit down. They want to have partners to compromise with them. They want to negotiate horse hockey, as Colonel Potter immortally said. They don't. The last thing in the world the Democrats want is a serious debate. They don't want a compromise. They are the ones who have prevented a compromise on the stimulus. They prevented a compromise on Obamacare. Don't forget, Obamacare passed Congress without a single Republican vote. That's a compromise? That's a compromise? There's no way that can be a compromise by any definition. What you're going to see from now on through November 6th, you're going to see the nastiest campaign we have ever seen. The low level that this has already sunk to, with the Soptic Septic ad accusing Romney of killing a woman by causing her cancer effectively. You saw another story. I hope you didn't. I read this stuff so you don't have to. There was a story, I guess it was on the Huffington Post about a week ago or just a few days ago, that talked about how Romney started Bain Capital with money from El Salvadoran investors who were tied to death squads, right-wing death squads going out and assassinating people in El Salvador. This is how low this is going to go. And it's going to continue to sink, because the truth is something the Democrats are allergic to. If you listen, just listen. Just listen to what Obama was talking about today. Let's find that, guys. Let's find that cut. Oh, yeah. How about Obama 2 from today? He's talking about Ryan blocking the farm bill. Obama 2, please.
The best way to help these states is for the folks in Congress to pass a farm bill that not only helps farmers and ranchers respond to natural disasters, but also makes some necessary reforms and gives farmers and ranchers some long-term certainty. Unfortunately, right now, too many members of Congress are blocking the farm bill from becoming law. I am told that Governor Romney's new running mate, Paul Ryan, might be around Iowa the next few days. He is one of the leaders of Congress standing in the way. So if you happen to see Congressman Ryan, tell him how important this farm bill is to Iowa and our rural communities. We've got to put politics aside when it comes to doing the right thing for rural America and for Iowa.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Well, first off, that was Obama in Iowa today, not in Chicago. He's been so many places, hard to keep track of the son of a gun. But the basic point here is he's lying, okay? Congress, the House of Representatives, passed a farm bill just about a week ago. They passed a farm bill, sent it to the Senate. Of course, Harry Reid's not bringing it up because Harry Reid and the Senate and Obama want a big five-year farm bill, not to do anything right now except to make another big spending program locked in to make sure that we can't get out of it. They're trying very hard to make sure that when Romney gets elected, heaven help us, I hope he does, when Romney gets elected, it's going to be really hard to roll back Obama. What Ryan and Romney are in a position to do with the addition of Ryan to the ticket is to roll back the Obama spending spree. That's death knell for liberalism. That's why we're going to have to take a break right now and come right back to you. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. And don't forget to go to www.michaelsavage.com for the latest stories. All right, there's a lot we've got to get to, and I want to spend this segment simply talking about what Paul Ryan has proposed, not what you're hearing from the media, not what you're going to be hearing through the campaign, because you're going to be hearing an awful lot of just plain old lies. I mean, lies from Obama, lies from Biden, lies from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, lies from their super PACs. But let's get to where they are. One thing, before I even get there, well, let me point out one of these lies, okay? The New York Times, which is effectively the Democratic Party's think tank, because the Democratic Party itself hasn't had a new idea since the night Bobby Kennedy died in 1968, they said in their editorial, their lead editorial today, the Romney-Ryan Plan for America, and I quote, by cutting $6 trillion from federal spending over the next 10 years, he, meaning Ryan, would eliminate or slash so many programs that the federal government would be unrecognizable, end quote. And that's supposed to be a problem for us? We don't recognize the government the way it is now. It is so bloated. It is so expensive. Somebody does need to slash these programs. All right, let's get right now to the Ryan plan, the Ryan budget plan, the roadmap for America. There have been two versions of it. The most recent version, let's talk about the four big ingredients here. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, tax reform, and health care. These people in the Democratic Party and all their super PACs, everybody else, are lining up to tell you huge lies about this. I just saw Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. She was on and saying, well, you know, they're really saying that, you know, this is not going to hurt Social Security, but it will. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a senior citizen, please record this segment. If you're someone who knows a senior citizen, record this segment or take notes, because this is really important, because we have faced an enormous number of lies, and we're going to see many, many, many more. Let me go through this relatively quickly. The Ryan plan provides as follows. Social Security, if you are 55 or older, it doesn't change anything. Let me repeat that. It doesn't change anything for you. You're benefits don't change, your payments don't change, nothing changes. If you're under 55, however, you have an option. This is the latest plan from Paul Ryan. You're going to have an option of sticking with the regular Social Security plan or Or you can have an option to invest one-third of your Social Security taxes that you would otherwise pay to the government, invest it privately, and that would be your own investment account. When you're retired, you can draw from it. If it's still left over when you pass away, it can pass to your children. It would be your property. That's a terrible idea when the government comes to say, oh, yeah, well, we can't have people doing things on their own. This also has a profound benefit for low-income Americans, and it really, gradually, over time, the Ryan plan would gradually raise retirement age to 70 by the year 2100, which basically is not going to affect anybody who's alive right now. So the point of the matter is, on Social Security, if you're a senior citizen, nothing changes. Same thing, Medicare, Medicaid. If you are over 55, if you're 55 or older, the Ryan plan changes nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you're a senior citizen or a seasoned citizen, oh, just over 55, nothing changes. You don't lose anything. It doesn't cost you anymore. Nothing changes. Under 55, again, you get an option. You have the ability to fully fund. You're also going to be able to have a, you know, an optional Medicare, Medicaid. You'll be able to have a voucher to go ahead and pay for that coming partially from the government. You'll be able to pay the rest yourself. You'll be able to choose your medical care coverage. You're also going to have fully funded medical savings accounts. Again, more freedom for Americans, a better way to invest your money. Tax reform, the Ryan plan, oh, it's terrible. No, it's not terrible. It's a little off kilter, and you know, some of us as fiscal conservatives are worried about this. Basically, it's a flat tax rate. If you've got you're a single person filing singly, $50,000 or less, you pay 10%, 25% for above. Same thing if you're married or filing jointly, you've got $100,000 income, 10%. More than that, 25%. They eliminate most of the deductions, and again, they replace the death tax, corporate tax comes down. All right, healthcare. Basically, they're replacing Obamacare with refundable tax credits. State-based healthcare exchanges. Now, these are the truths of Ryan's plan. What you've been hearing and you're going to hear are a lot of lies. All right, we've got to take another break. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. Promise, I'm getting to your calls. We'll be right back. Stick with us.
Savage.
You deserve to decide what kind of country we're going to have, what kind of people we are going to be. It is our obligation to give you, our fellow citizens, a choice of two futures. You're going to decide. Because if we do this right and we reapply those principles that built this country, we honor you by letting you decide the choice in the course of this country. We will get our country back on November the 6th.
Well, that was Paul Ryan accepting Mitt Romney's offer of the vice presidential nomination on Saturday in Norfolk, Virginia. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. I made a mistake in the last segment, ladies and gentlemen, because I ran out of time. I wanted to spend just a couple more seconds. Promise I'll get you right to your phone calls right now. But on health care, the Paul Ryan plan, regardless of what you're hearing from the Democrats, here is the truth. Replace Obamacare. Okay, with a refundable tax credit, $2,300 for an individual, $5,700 for families. You will have state-based healthcare exchanges, so you'll be able to market you'll be able to buy the best insurance on your own. You won't have to be dictated to by Obama. It will also allow small businesses to pool insurance so that they can actually afford it, to give it to more of their employees. This is a better system. Don't forget. Both Social Security and Medicare are going broke. And you remember also, I hope, that Obamacare takes $700 billion out of Medicare. That's going to pay for Obamacare. All you seniors out there, that's going to hurt you a lot more than anything coming out of Paul Ryan. All right, let's go to your calls. 800-449-8255. Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. Line 6, Michael in New York. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Michael Savage Show.
Yes, 2 points. Point number one, you're giving people incorrect information. You're calling
really?
This the
like what?
Romney-Ryan bill or act. They already questioned Romney, and Romney said, I will not follow the Ryan Act. I have my own agenda. He is basically trying to stay clear of Romney's plan. He wants no part of it. He has his own plan. What that is, we don't know.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. Michael. Number one, you're stating something that's just fundamentally not correct. Ryan has the plan. Romney has a plan as well. Romney has specifically endorsed the Ryan plan. I'm not giving people misinformation. You are. Okay, your next point.
Okay, next point. The Ryan Act wants to give big tax breaks to corporations. Here's what he should have said. Yes, I am 100% for giving big tax breaks to corporations, provided corporations like Whirlpool and General Electric leave lousy, stinking China. And
all right, wait a minute. Wait, Michael, there again, you're saying something he should have said. All right, that's your opinion. What our friend Paul Ryan is saying is, number one, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the civilized world, which is true. We have a higher corporate tax rate than Italy or Spain or all the European countries that are about to go down the tubes. And what Paul Ryan is saying, we're going to reduce that, and we're going to reduce it for American companies. I'd like to see him go further, as a matter of fact. He wants to reduce the rate from 35% to 25%. I think what we also ought to have is a repatriation credit, so companies who have made money overseas can bring that money back to America and hire more Americans. Right now, they pay a very, very high, a confiscatory high tax rate on that. Okay, next point.
Companies be forced to bring the jobs back.
Well, I think you shouldn't be able to do that in a free market economy. I don't want a government to tell me or tell my company where I can have people work or how I can have people work or have them force me to bring a job from one place to another.
So
if I want a subcontract, wait a minute. If our money is our money, it's not the government's money. It's not the government to say you should hire people only of a certain color or of a certain location. What we need to do is to have Americans free to make their own economic decisions. That's how you bring prosperity back to this country, which we do not have now. All right, hey, thanks for the call. Good call. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what we're up against. People are going to mischaracterize and flat out say untruths about what Ryan and Romney are trying to do. Look, I am not saying here that Mitt Romney is perfect. I've been a very harsh critic of him. I've been very skeptical of him. I like Paul Ryan. He's not perfect. There are a lot of things that people will say, and quite correctly. He did things like he voted for the TARP, Troubled Assets Relief Program, under George Bush, when you had George Bush saying, well, I've got to violate free market principles in order to save the free market. I mean, to me, George Bush was basically saying, like that guy in Vietnam, hey, we've got to destroy the village in order to save it. That's not fiscal conservatism. But Paul Ryan, as a senior member of the House, was going there, and what can he do? Is he going to just say, the president, go buzz off? They were looking into a really unknown situation. I'm not happy that he did it, but I'll tell you what, it seems to me right now we can't start picking this guy apart. It's time, whether we like it or not. And again, these people are not perfect, but looking at the alternative, another 4 years of Obama and Biden, I don't think this country can survive it. Fiscally and national security-wise, I do not think we can survive another 4 years of these guys. So we've got to vote for Romney and Ryan. All right, let's go to line four. Ken in Michigan, thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that as a conservative, independent conservative, I'm not thrilled with Paul Ryan, but neither am I thrilled with Romney. I'm concerned for the future of our country. I want to reverse the course that we're on. I really feel when you look at Ryan and how he more than once voted to raise our debt ceiling, you look at the way he's voted in other cases. I believe that what we're going to see is a Romney-Ryan presidency. If they win the White House, they will slow down the course that our country is heading in, but they will not, I believe, change course.
Let me stop you there, Ken, because I think you're making an important point, and I think your points are pretty valid. But let me ask you this. Are you going to vote for Ryan and Romney? Or not? Are you going to stay home and let Obama win? What are you going to do?
I'm voting for the Constitution Party candidate.
Oh, God. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're going to throw your vote away effectively by doing that. You're going to vote for the Constitution Party and Daryl, Virgil Good. What you're basically doing at that point, you're voting for Obama. I'm sorry. You are voting for Obama. You're throwing your vote away. I think that's just disgusting. I really do. I think that's just an I won't say it's un-American because, you know, every American has a right to be wrong. But I've got to tell you, that is outrageous. I think that's something that you are throwing your vote away. You're insulting everybody else who's trying to really fix the problem. You can quibble, you can deny, you can just yell and carry on, and that's fine. But don't tell me that you're voting for Virgil Good, whoever he is. I know who very well he is, a former Virginia congressman, and he's voting some third-party idiot ticket down there in Southern Virginia. He's going to get all the votes that are on his Christmas card list, and what he's doing. What he's doing, you know, you look at Virginia, and I live in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I love Virginia, but Virginia went for Obama last time. And when you have some clown like Virgil Good out there, and he's going to take, I don't know, maybe 1% of the vote, maybe a 1.5% of the vote at most, maybe 2%. That might be enough to give Virginia to Obama. So get it through your thick skulls, people. If you don't vote for Romney, whether you stay home or you vote for some third-party wacko, you're voting for Obama. That's your choice, not mine. All right, it's too early for a break, and thank heavens for that. Let's go right back to the phones. Line 9, June in Houston. Welcome to the Savage Nation, ma'am. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Nobody seems to be reporting that the premiums for Medicare are going from $100 a month to $140 in 2013 to $247 in 2014. That's 150% raise. And half the people in the doctor's offices don't know it. The doctors know, but the people that work for them and the patients don't. And I'd like to know why those figures have never gone out. The $700 billion, we hear, but we don't hear about the premiums going up 150% under Obamacare.
Well, the only reason we don't hear about it, June, and thank you for raising that point, is that people such as myself get tangled up in a lot of other things, and we get very excited, and we don't give those issues enough air. And that's simply the truth. And you're right. Look, Obama is he's hurting seniors by raising these costs. And, you know, he's trying to do the same thing for retired military people. They're trying to raise the copay on what's called TRICARE, which is the bridge between military on active duty, their health care, and Social Security. TRICARE is a pretty darn good system, and it's very good for our retired military. But Obama's trying to double or triple, I forget the precise number, the copays there. So all of this is building up, ladies and gentlemen. All of this is building up because people are not taking an honest look at health care. They're buying into the media's baloney that, oh, Ryan is going to gut health care. Romney wants to throw grandma off the bridge and, you know, Ryan's going to be toxic in Florida. It's all nonsense. What we have to do is penetrate this and make it a real debate. Make it an ideological debate. That's what Obama's afraid of. That's when he calls Ryan, the ideological leader of the House conservatives. Well, yeah, thank heavens. That's what we need.
My opponent chose his running mate, the ideological leader of the Republicans in Congress.
Yeah, thank you, Barry. We listened to you once today. We don't need to do it again. But that's the point, ladies and gentlemen. We need to listen, and we need to listen to Ryan, and we need to listen to Romney, and we need to hold them to conservative values. I'm not saying we should just vote for these guys and forget about it. We have to get them in the White House because we have to get Barry Obama out. All right, let's go back to you, 800-449-8255. Line 10, John in Lexington, Kentucky. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thank you. I want to say that I believe that Will and Ronnie pick a great choice in Paul Ryan. I'm not a big fan of Romney, but I am a big fan of Ryan. I think Ryan's more conservative than Romney, and I think both of them can be very Sotero easily.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope. And, you know, let's not get into this Barry Sotero stuff. I mean, Obama is who he is. The only thing I need to learn to make sure that I am completely opposed to this guy is that he's a radical liberal. Well, even if he were just a regular liberal. But this is what we have to face. This is what we have to go up against. And this is what we have to win against these guys in November. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very serious. You know, I've spent most of my adult life either in the military or around the military, in government and around the government. You know, basically, we can't survive another 4 years of this guy. We look at what's going on in our economy. The jobless recovery, it's not a recovery if it's jobless, boys and girls. We've got national security concerns eating away around us. I mean, it's just I mentioned in the introductory segment to the show, and we have the prospect of Israel launching an attack against Iran within the next few weeks or couple of months. And what's Obama going to do? He's not going to support Israel. He's not going to take Iran seriously. He keeps pushing for sanctions. And what we have in a situation around the world, things are falling apart, and largely because Barry Obama doesn't get it. All right, we got to take a break, and we're going to come right back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. See you in a minute.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Let's go right back to your calls. How about line 5? Heidi in Houston. Welcome to the Savage Nation, ma'am. Thanks for calling in.
My comment is that, to me, immigration is the greatest threat to the economy today. And although the Paul Ryan pick is fair, I still view him as kind of dangerous, because if you look at his scorecard on immigration, and you can find this out at www.numbersusa.com, it's kind of poor. He's voted for amnesties in the past, chain migration. He's for an increase in legal immigration / high-tech workers. With 20 million people unemployed, teenagers out of work, you know, his influence, because he is lukewarm on the enforcement of immigration law, I view him kind of as a threat.
Let me interrupt a minute for you, Heidi. Number one, I'm looking at the Almanac of American Politics, and it says right here that he voted against legalizing immigrants' kids. He voted against the DREAM Act ideas, and I don't have all the data on the other stuff you're referring. And, you know, maybe that website has the right deal. But, you know, again, the problem that I've got here is we're not going to get somebody who's perfect. And who would have been better? I mean, maybe Alan West would have been better.
Yes, Alan West, Steve King, Ted Poe of Texas, Jeff Sessions, these are all enforcement immigrants.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Heidi. But I'm to the point here where I'm saying I think we have to overlook some of these imperfections. I mean, again, Mitt Romney is a long way from perfect. He's not someone I would have picked to be the Republican nominee. But he is the Republican nominee. Paul Ryan, I think, is a really good man. I think he's very smart. I think he's right on most things. And, you know, to paraphrase Ronald Reagan, if you're 90% my friend, you're not 10% my enemy. At this point, the choice is Romney and Ryan or Obama and Biden. And I think if you look at what Obama and Biden have done illegally, I think, and unconstitutionally, and basically saying they're going to run rings around the immigration law, and by presidential fiat say that they're not going to deport people who under the law should be deported, I think that's a lot worse, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I guess all we can do is kind of educate Mitt Romney, and the public needs to put it in their face, or educate them on the subject a little bit to try to bend them our way.
Heidi, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, if Romney wins and Romney and Ryan win, and I hope they do, I think we're going to have the job is just going to be starting, because we're just going to have to hold their feet to the fire, and we're going to have to make sure that conservative principles are the guiding light of all they do. And it may not be unless and until we speak up very loudly and clearly and continuously. Hey, great call, Heidi. Thanks for calling in. Let's go probably one more before the break. How about line 3? Daryl in Sacramento. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes. Like you said, you're not going to get a perfect candidate. Even President Reagan, you know, voted for an amnesty act in his second term. But the real issue is the party of the Democrats have fomented all this with socialistic programs. Yet FDR in the early 30s with Social Security, supposed to be a temporary program to augment, you know, retirement.
Yeah, no, it was never supposed to be a massive national welfare program. And the problem we've got, Daryl, and one of the big problems we're going to continue to have, is that in this country, it used to be a bad thing. It used to carry a stigma, a social stigma, if you took welfare. You know, that no longer is the case. People right now, hey, you know, hey, more I can get in welfare, the better, and hey, brag about it. But that's the problem we've got. One of the main problems we've got, people don't feel any social stigma for taking welfare. Now, there are a lot of people who reach retirement age and don't have enough income. They weren't wise enough to save. They weren't fortunate enough to be able to save. Whatever. So there's going to be some Social Security to take care of them. But I agree with you. The Democrats have brought us to this fiscal crisis. How are we going to get out of it? We have got to get out of it by taking a meat axe to the federal budget, to canceling an awful lot of federal programs and a lot of federal agencies. I'm going back to what that New York Times editorial today was saying, which I just absolutely love. They accuse Ryan of wanting to kill many federal programs, or so many federal programs, that the federal government be unrecognizable. That's exactly what we want. That's exactly what we need. In this country, we have a federal government right now that is so big and so bloated, I don't recognize it. Just from my years growing up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, I don't recognize the government right now. I want that government back. And the only way we're going to get it is to stop feeding the beast, to stop funding these programs, to have somebody, and I hope Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are serious about it, but we know Barack Obama isn't. We know Barack Obama will do nothing to restrain federal growth, to restrain federal spending. They want more. If you look at what Obama said today about the farm bill, the answer for it, we didn't play that part of the clip. He was saying, well, we're going to take action right now. We, our administration, are going to do it right now. What are they going to do? They're going to go out and with federal money, they're going to buy meat and poultry and things that are being on the market to prop up the prices. They're going to use your money right now to get reelected by bribing the farmers. This has got to stop. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. We'll be right back after the break. 800-449-8255. Stick with us.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
When I first heard this, I thought, this is Romney's way of putting a spine in his back. And that may be Romney's spine, or more likely the spine of Paul Ryan, but at least now the ticket has one.
Oh, Chris, go away. Chris Matthews, that's probably the most people who will ever listen to him this week, because nobody listens to MSNBC, nor should they. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. We're talking about the Romney choice of Congressman Paul Ryan for the running mate. I think it's a pretty good choice. And what do you think? I've been hearing a lot of people not terribly crazy about it. We're also hearing so much from the media about it. I just had to laugh. During the break, I was watching CNN out of one corner, one eye, and I see, well, they're talking about the Obama budget and how big a difference there is between the Obama budget and the Obama fiscal plan to what Romney and Ryan are proposing. Let's just set the record straight here. Obama doesn't have a budget. He throws something up to Congress, and I use those words advisedly. He throws it up to Congress, and they reject it. We have gone to over 1,200 days now. I think that the iPad didn't even exist the last time the Democrats in the Senate passed a budget. We've gone 1,200 days without a budget because Obama keeps throwing up this stuff, and even the Senate Democrats can't stand it. When you have 98-0 votes against Obama's budget, don't tell me that their budget is better than Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney's, because they don't have one. It is just so ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen, to have to listen to this garbage again and again, day after day after day. Well, Obama's going to do that, and he's not. And Obama's promising, no, he's not going to live up to it. And Obama's going to, you know, Obama this, Obama that. I'm just sick of it. Let's hear a real debate. Well, the media will try to prevent that. And I got to tell you, we are going to have a Joey Biden moment later in the show. I'd forgotten we had this one. And we're also going to be joined later in the show by Michael Barone, who was fair and balanced before Fox News was born. But right now we're talking about how these people are spinning and grinning and just spitting at us. Spitting at us all of these lies and all of this nonsense about how bad the Ryan plan is, about how bad Ryan is, how bad Romney is. You know, these guys aren't perfect. You and I probably would not have picked these two, but I'll tell you what, all things being equal, it's a lot better than we could have done with some of the others. All right, let's get back to your calls at 800-449-8255. Let's go to line four, Grant in Sacramento. Well, I lived there for a couple of years when I was in the Air Force. Grant, thanks for calling in. How's the weather?
Hey, bud, the weather's hotter than hell.
That usually is, but it's dry out there, right? I mean, I just remember going out there, and it was, you know, 105 degrees, and it just didn't even feel bad.
Well, I've been in Arizona in 120, and it feels nicer than 100 in Sacramento.
All right. Well, you didn't call in to talk about the weather. Let's go on. You want to talk about defense spending?
And I'll admit, I'm a liberal. I'm on the other side. I voted for Barack Obama.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Well, including yourself, because
that's true.
I think what is derisive and divisive for everybody is radio shows like this, in all honesty. Because
really? Now, wait a minute. You think it's divisive and some other word you use, divisive. I'm not sure that the two words are different in the English language. But the basic point here is I've spent the last, hour and 10 minutes talking about the facts. I've tried to present the facts very clearly about what the Ryan plan is and what it isn't. And I've been pointing out some of the fallacies in what we're hearing from your side of the equation. Now, what have we done today that is not factual?
Fallacies, the problem is, and if you quote, I'll quote Ben Franklin, the two parties would be the death.
Wait. Grant, you're not answering the question. You're falling into this liberal mire that you throw out these accusations and you can't support them. You know, I try to talk to liberals because I do believe in my heart of hearts some of you are souls worth saving. But you got to go with me on this. Tell me what I've said that's not factual.
Side of the plate, your side of the dinner table, right?
What are you talking about? I'm talking about here the facts of the Ryan plan, and I've described to our listeners what it is, and I've described to it what is not. When you're talking about, and you have your buddy, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, whose name wouldn't fit on the SAT line of last names because it's too many letters, you know, she's out there saying, well, it's really going to hurt seniors. It's not. The specifics of the Ryan plan say if you're 55 years or older, nothing changes in Medicare or Social Security. Isn't that true?
That is true.
Okay. All right. Well, we're making progress here, Grant. This is really good. Okay, next point. What did I say that you think is untrue?
Are Republicans willing to spend if it's defense?
Well, Republicans are willing to cut defense spending if your question were, you know, formulated a little bit more directly. You know, I think the defense budget is the primary obligation of this country to get right. But as I have written and as I have said, and I know a very large number of military leaders and Republicans in Congress who agree with me, that we want to cut defense, but cut it responsibly. We're going to be cutting defense a lot. What I want to do is not just cut defense. Number one, I want to cut defense, but only responsibly. And number two, I want to dump out of the federal budget all of these bozo programs that have accumulated over the past 100 years that we frankly should have no business in. I believe that the Constitution of the United States sets out what the duties of the government should be and what the government should be doing, and it limits what else the government should not be doing. And if it's not a constitutional function, I think the government should not be in that business and drop all of those programs. Would you agree with that?
We shouldn't take care of our citizens, even though our citizens are taking care of the rest of the world.
Well, wait a minute. That's not my question. The question is, we can take care of our citizens, and I did not say that we shouldn't, all right? That's my first line here, and you're accusing me of something that I did not say. But the basic point, too, is, what are we saying? We're saying that the government has certain tasks to perform, and that the government should not be involved in and spending money on things that are not within those constitutional purviews. Do you agree with that or not?
Should we be spending money?
No. Please, please, please answer my question. Do you believe that the government should be involved and spending money on things that are not duties that are called out for it in the Constitution?
That are called out for in the Constitution. Doesn't the Constitution say that we're not supposed to pay
one of these days, one of these days, I'm going to get a liberal to answer a question. You know, forget it. Let's just drop this guy. You know, this is the problem. We try to educate liberals, ladies and gentlemen, and it's just like Bill Buckley said. God rest his soul. And I don't remember precisely when he said it, but it was a line, I think, it might have been on Firing Line, or it might have been in one of the debates he had with Gore Vidal in the 1968 Democratic Convention coverage. But he said something, and I think it was very clearly these words. He said, "You can't argue with the invincibly ignorant of this world." And this is part of the problem with the Democratic Party. It's the entire problem with the liberals in this country. They are so ideological, they just don't listen. They don't get it. They can't hear the words you're saying, because their minds filter them out. No matter what you say, no matter how many facts you put in front of them, they don't hear it unless it meets their ideological bent. If it doesn't fit within their ideology, they literally have a physical impairment, a mental impairment that allows them to not hear these words. If you say something to a liberal that the liberal doesn't agree with, they physically don't hear you. It's a real problem. I wish, you know, some doctor might call in and tell me what the cure for this might be. But I really do think in some ways, well, in most ways, liberalism is a mental disorder. All right, let's go right back to the phones. Line 2, Mark in Houston. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. You know, part of the problem that I see is that the Democratic Party is so fundamentally off base. Even if you listen to Michelle Obama's last speech for her husband's campaign, she refers to the country as a democratic nation. And it's not even a democratic nation. It's a republic. And, you know, it's simple things like that. And then the attack that they're making, saying that that we don't have a farm bill, that the Republican Party doesn't want to pass. It passed 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, Mark, it's like I was just saying, and you're right. But it's not just that they don't understand the republic. They don't much like it. They don't understand that we're a republic. They don't believe that we should not be a plebiscitary democracy. You know, they've got one in California. Fine. How's that working? You know, the point really is the Democrats can't hear it. Their minds don't function that way. I really seriously think there is something neurologically wrong with these people. They have a filter built in there that they don't hear what you're saying if what you're saying is a conservative principle or fact. They only hear things that they agree with. I don't know how we get past this. I really don't. And we just can't argue with these people because they don't hear. It's not just that they don't listen. They don't even hear. Hey, great call, Mark. Thanks for it. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Take a break a little bit early. We've got a lot more to do. Michael Barone coming up. I want to talk about Fast and Furious. And I want to talk about the lawsuit that Daryl Issa filed against our esteemed Attorney General, Eric Holder. And just think, before we break, ladies and gentlemen, think about this. 4 more years of Obama, 4 more years of Eric Holder. Ain't that a wonderful thought? Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Savage. And don't forget to go to www.michaelsavage.com for the latest stories. All right, a couple more minutes on this Paul Ryan selection by Mitt Romney. And I think that a lot of people are calling in and saying that they've got mixed feelings about it. Okay, fair enough. Let's go on to other subjects after this segment, but right now we'll stick with it. All right, line 10, Jay in Victorville, California. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, and thank you, and it's Jerry from Victorville. By the way, thank you for being there and staying in for Michael Savage.
Well, thank you. It's a great pleasure and a privilege.
Now, I have been a Ron supporter, Ron Paul supporter. I even did a promo on radio, because I've been on radio 4 years myself, and I did a promo for him. But right now, as it looks like we're going to have a Romney and Ryan ticket. Now, I want to let the people out there know one thing for sure, because I'm like you. I've been fighting this since the 1960s. We have to put somebody in office who will get the traitor out of the White House and the rest of Congress that does not want to obey the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Now, we can go a third party. I support both of them. But we cannot do it at this particular time. In a very famous manner, you've got to stick with one of the parties and win the battle.
Well, yeah, Jerry, I agree with a lot of what you said. I'm not going to call Obama a traitor. And, you know, we have to get people who want to obey the Constitution and will do it. And I agree with that. But I'm really glad to hear from a Ron Paul supporter that says, well, you've got to now rally around the party, because that's important. And that's why I'm so critical of people like that fellow who called in the last hour and said he was voting for Virgil Good in the Constitution Party. Look, it's a very simple choice. Nobody is saying that Romney and Ryan are perfect. A long way from it. But nobody's perfect. And the fact of the matter is, between the choices we have, that's the only one that's even rational at this point. This country and our economy are not going to survive 4 more years of Obama's spending spree. We have to have the Republicans hold in the House, and hopefully, I'm hoping, that the Republicans might even take the Senate. But if they don't take the White House, nothing else is really going to matter, because the Congress, it's going to be at the best perhaps stalled as it is right now. So what we've got to do is we've got to get some people in the White House who will roll back all of this stuff that Obama has done by just executive fiat. The first thing that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan ought to do if they get elected, they'd do, well, two things. Number one, they ought to have a team in place to go in and just reverse every executive order that Obama has signed. Every one of them. And go in and have a team that will go into the executive agencies and pull back these regulations. The only way to make that happen, and I'll tell you, I'll take a couple more minutes to say this, one of the things that they have to do, if they can win, they have to understand the principle, Reagan principle, of policy and personnel are interchangeable. Policy is personnel. Personnel is policy. So what you've got to do is you have to have a team of really ruthless guys and gals who will take all of the executive agencies and weed out all of the Obama appointees, not just the cabinet secretaries who are easy to get rid of, not just the U.S. attorneys, but all of the people in all of these agencies who are political appointees. They have to be gotten out of there, and good conservative people have to be put in. That's the way to roll this thing back. That's the way to stop the hemorrhaging. That's the way to at least start doing something, even without Congress. Don't forget all of the stuff that Obama is doing now without congressional legislation. That thing he did on immigration a couple of months ago. I remember being on the show where the day that all came out, and we had a situation where the President of the United States is saying, well, I'm not going to deport people who are supposed to be deported, and I'm going to allow people to stay in this country, and they're going to have a temporary amnesty, and they're going to have some sort of a green card and a work permit. None of that is within his power of the presidency. That's what we have to have rolled back immediately. Immediately. And the more we can get that done, I mean, and again, this is the way we have to rally around Romney. If we have doubts about him, fine. We can quibble amongst ourselves. We can go, and when he gets elected, we can start working on him and on Ryan and on the Congress to really keep them in line. And there's a chance, a very good chance, that we could do that. It's not going to be a sure thing. It's not going to be a certainty. Nobody ever says that it's going to be. But if these guys win, we at least have a shot. We don't have a shot with Obama. If Obama gets reelected, you know, all of the things that we're hearing about, all of these wacky ideas that are floating out there, they're going to come to pass. We're going to be hearing about, well, more gun control legislation. We're going to hear about another stimulus bill. We're going to hear about all of these things he's talking about. I mean, the farm bill that he wants to put more spending in an institutionalized way. That's another thing that Romney and Ryan and Congress are going to have to take on if Romney and Ryan win. They're going to have to go back and look at these programs that Obama has put in. Not just Obamacare. There are a lot of them in there that are long-term spending plans. That's what he's talking about the farm bill now. He doesn't want just a farm bill to get through the year. He wants a 5-year spending plan that can't be changed later. We got to stop these guys, and we have to rally around them. All right, Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. Take a quick break. Be right back to you. Stick with us. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babbitt sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. All right, we're going to take a few more calls, but then we've got to switch subject. We spent a lot of time on this Paul Ryan thing. I think it's a good topic. I think it's a very much worthwhile discussion. But there's a lot of other news out there. Pardon me. All right, let's go just a couple more. Line 8, Bob in New York. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. I just got to tell you that anybody who's collecting welfare, and there's over 100 million people like that out in the country, is not going to vote for Romney. They're going to stick with the status quo, and they're going to stick with it real hard because they're not going to want their benefits to change. And secondly, social scientists will agree across the country, if somebody loses their job, they can handle it. But when you take away something that's welfare, you take away food stamps, you take away unemployment benefits, when you take away something that's been given to them from the government, that's when they start to get violent and start freaking out.
Whoa. Bob, what are you saying here, that we shouldn't modify welfare? I mean, are you saying that maybe Obama was right in cutting back the work requirements on welfare?
No, sir. I totally agree with the Ryan program, and I'm all for it. I'm just saying that once it gets implemented, we're stuck. We're going to be in a really bad way because...
Well, you're talking about two things here, and I agree in part with what you're saying. Look, number one, and I've said this many, many times, I've said it on the show, democracy fails when the tax eaters outnumber the taxpayers, and we're right at that point. Roughly 50% of American households do not pay tax. So we are at the position where, yeah, I'm sure that most of the people on welfare, if they vote at all, they'll vote for Obama. They're not going to vote for Romney. But we still have a chance to save this democracy. We don't have the situation now where the tax eaters clearly outnumber the taxpayers. So what we've got to do is, as Paul Ryan said on Saturday, we've got to take our country back. And this is the last chance we're going to have, because if we have another 4 years of Obama, we're going to have millions and millions and millions more on welfare. And the ability of this country to support these programs and to pay for what these people are taking from the federal government, it's just going to disappear. We're going to be very quickly like France or Italy or Spain, all of these countries. And it's going to be very instructive, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad this caller raised it, because we really are going to see something before this election that's going to be highly instructive. I believe that you're going to see Greece exit the euro. I believe you're going to see Italy pretty much go tango uniform. They're going to have their economy crash. France is very close to doing the same thing. Portugal and Spain, all of these countries who have lived as socialist welfare states for the past 50 years, it's going to come to an end. Germany is not going to pay for their bills much longer. If you have a situation, it may come out, oh gosh, I think in the next couple of weeks, in the German Constitutional Court, they're ruling on whether Germany can participate in a program where the European Central Bank is going to be able to buy up the bonds of some of these failing countries and prop them up. If the German court says no, then Angela Merkel says nein, and then, you know what? I think you're going to see Greece fall out of the euro in a matter of days. They're pretty much dead economically already. They're running out of money. And how is that going to feed back here? In this election, number one, we're going to see what's happening to those people. But number two, our economy is going to take a big shot. It's going to take a big blow, because a lot of American banks, not to the extent that a lot of other banks are, but a lot of American banks hold European debt. They have assets in Europe, and that's going to come back and be worthless. So our banks are going to be hurt. Our economy will be given a terrible blow. And Obama's going to stand there and say, well, I'm not responsible for it, but he will be. And I think Romney and Ryan would be fools to not tag him with it. All right, let's get back to the calls. One or two more on Ryan. We got to move out. Line 3, Walt in Delaware. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I could stay on all night with the conversations that you're having.
Well, we only have 3 hours, Walt, so fire away.
I could fill them.
Well, trust me. After 3 hours, I'm always whining to the producer saying, I want another hour. I'm not done yet.
I'll leave my number. You can call me back.
Okay. Thanks. Go ahead, though.
Mr. Ryan's a good pick. Even on both sides of the aisle, they're saying the guy knows the economy, knows the ins and outs of the finances, and this is what we need right now. We need to make the cuts where the cuts don't hurt the American people, and in the proper places. And you mentioned one, the military defense spending. They already cut that I believe, by about 15 to 20%. I don't think we can go much further there, not at this time.
Yeah, you're right. They cut it already by $487 billion over 10 years. And, you know, the question is, if you can cut more, are you cutting fat or muscle? And nobody knows. The Defense Department doesn't even know. Now, Walt, you make a good point. I mean, the real issue here is Ryan is a pretty good choice for the economy. I think that Romney and Ryan can win it, but we'll just have to see how it plays. I mean, the Democrats and the media are all over these guys, and they've got to fight. And that's one thing that we haven't seen a lot of Romney doing in the past several months. He's been better lately. In the past month or so, he's been much better than he was previously. And now with Ryan, you know, maybe they can really get after Obama, because that's what they've got to do. They can't be on the defensive. Romney has been on the defensive so long on Bain Capital and so many other things. He's got to just take the fight to the other side, shift the narrative, make those other guys sit back, and let's see what they can defend. Hey, great call, Walt. I appreciate it very much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got a break from this subject. Let's just go right to the issue. Today, Darrell Issa, the chairman of the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, filed a lawsuit against Eric Holder, our wonderful attorney general, to force him to comply with the subpoena that the House committee asked him to produce documents, almost a year and a half ago, on the Fast and Furious gun walking program. Now, you remember Fast and Furious, and it caused the death of Border Patrolman Brian Terry. What they were doing, the ATF down in Phoenix, was going through a program where they were letting people buy guns illegally with the idea that somehow they're going to get them across, the illegal buyers were going to get them across into Mexico, and the ATF would trace them and arrest all these guys. But it went awry because two things. Number one, it wasn't really intended for that. And I think the evidence is pretty clear by now. Eric Holder, and probably with Barack Obama's knowledge and approval, was using this program to build support for more gun control. The whole issue in their minds was the idea that Americans could sell and buy assault weapons, which they variously define as pretty much anything that has a semi-automatic operation and around more than 10 rounds capacity. So they were saying, well, how do we build political momentum for more gun control? Let's show that these gun sellers down in Texas and New Mexico and Arizona were going to be irresponsible. They're letting people violate the law. By letting these people violate the law, the ATF knew that these guns were going across the border, they're being bought illegally, and they did nothing to stop them. So one of those guns, or more than one, ends up at the scene where Border Patrolman Brian Terry was killed by one of these guns, or more than one of these guns. And then the hue and cry started. Darrell Issa took up an investigation, the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee, and they sent our friend Holder a subpoena asking him to produce a lot of documents and to show what was done, what was the motivation for the program, and how this thing developed and how it was run, and did they meet and talk about these things with the White House, or who knew about it. And roughly, according to the documents released by the House Oversight and Government Reform and Oversight Committee, there were about 75,000 documents that were identified that were producible and responsive to this subpoena. And what basically happened was that Eric Holder said, well, we'll produce 10% of them. And they did. So less than 8,000 documents were produced to the committee. And he said, well, we're not going to give you the rest of them. And they went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, on the eve of the contempt vote, the committee was getting the House of Representatives to hold Eric Holder in contempt of Congress. And what happened then was that Holder came up and said, oh, I want to make a compromise. And you know what his compromise was? He came up to a meeting with the committee leadership, and he said, well, I'll brief you on the contents of some of these documents, but I won't give them to you. And they said, quite rightly, baloney. We're not going to do that. We're not going to settle for it, because we already know that we can't trust you. There had been a letter sent up to the congressional committees that said that the Justice Department higher-ups did not know about this program. And all of those things were known to the Justice Department, probably known to Holder himself. So that letter was quite simply a lie. It was an intentional misdirection to the Congress. So now Congress is faced with a situation where they can't get the documents, they can't get Holder to give them the documents, and he comes up and says, well, I'm going to brief you on them. And they said, baloney. And what they did then was vote on contempt of Congress. Contempt of Congress immediately after that, well, actually right before it, Barack Obama says, I'm invoking executive privilege. I'm invoking executive privilege, and I won't let Holder produce these documents. This is, you know, pretty much Obama's equivalent of Watergate. It was an unconstitutional extension of the executive privilege, and now we have Congress suing to compel Holder to abide by their subpoena and to say to Obama that his assertion of executive privilege doesn't wash. And this is a very important fight, ladies and gentlemen, because what we have here, Obama keeps talking about openness, and he says, I'm going to be the guy who's, you know, the biggest, open, most honest administration ever. Well, of course, none of that is true. And when we see him asserting privilege on these documents, you know, for example, the House subpoena had something like 22 categories of documents. Some of them were something like, oh, documents showing the ATF's failure to interdict strawman purchases, documents relating to communications between the U.S. Attorney in Arizona, ATF, and some other ATF agents related to Fast and Furious, surveillance camera tapes, reports of investigation. You know, this is the kind of thing that Congress has to get to perform its oversight role. Now, Congress has a responsibility. Under the Constitution of the United States, Congress is supposed to make sure that the agencies are doing what they are authorized to do under the legislation that authorizes them to exist and to conduct their yearly operations. And Congress is thwarted from its job of oversight by this executive privilege claim. Now, as I explained in an article in American Spectator, oh golly, way back in June 25th, title was Obama's Watergate. The basic point here was the extension, the over-assertion of the executive privilege makes this something, it makes Richard Nixon look good. It makes every president before Obama look good in comparison to this guy, because what he's doing is he's trying to assert privilege over things that had nothing to do with him. If the executive privilege applies, it has to apply to things that the White House was at least involved in and getting briefed on and probably having direct contact with or involvement in. That's how the executive privilege, the presidential use privilege, comes in. This is not the case here. These people at the Justice Department are saying, well, I mean, that's not how these documents work. They now have to produce in court a justification for this. And this is a very tough thing for them to do. It's going to play out in a U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. over the next couple of months. And if the House committee plays its cards right, and I'll tell you, I've tried a lot of injunction cases in that very same court. One of the defects in my life is I am a lawyer, but I'm a very experienced litigator. And I will tell you, they can get the relief that they need, because this assertion of executive privilege on these documents in Fast and Furious is simply not constitutional. All right, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this. 800-449-8255. My question to you is, should Congress push this lawsuit faster and compel Holder to get these documents to them? Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. Be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. We're talking about the congressional lawsuit that began today against Eric Holder, trying to compel him to produce the documents related to the Fast and Furious gunwalking operation that they've refused to produce and that Barack Obama has claimed executive privilege on. I mean, shades of Watergate in tenfold. The real issue here is coming down to what's called the presidential deliberative process privilege. Obama is trying to protect all of these things under executive privilege, and there's a whole bunch of kinds of executive privilege, ranging from the state secrets privilege, which protects, obviously, classified information, to the deliberative process privilege, which protects information and documents which are prepared for the president or for his staff at their request. And the courts have said very clearly The deliberative process privilege is bound to the president's advisory process. If the documents in question were prepared in response to a request for advice by the president's staff, even a lower-ranking subordinate's work can be protected by the deliberative process privilege. However, what Obama is trying to protect is a whole lot more than that. A lot of documents, the majority of which, I mean, 78,000, 80,000 documents, we don't even know how many there are at this point. I've heard estimates saying over 100,000 documents that have nothing to do with the presidential deliberative process privilege. So this is going to be fought out in U.S. District Court. My opinion as a former lawyer is that the Committee on Government Oversight and Reform, Darrell Issa, has a good case. The question is, can they push this fast enough? Can they push it fast enough? Probably not. The problem with a U.S. District Court is you end up having a case that may go for, I don't know, 18 months before it comes to trial. They may not get it in time to influence this election. They ought to be putting the heat on it as best they can. Let's take a quick call before we have to go to the break. How about line three? Kenneth in New York. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
How are you? I just wanted to compliment you, by the way, on your excellent summarization of Fast and Furious.
Well, thank you. It's kind of tough to jam it in so fast, but I tried.
I've read about it before. Just tuning into the show for the first time, and you are a guest host. So you have to forgive me, I didn't know your name.
Well, that's okay. Jed Babin, and I'm glad you called. What part of New York are you from, Kenneth?
This is a travesty of justice, the whole Obama administration is.
Well, that's true. But, you know, that's the point. It's a travesty of the Department of Justice. What we have here in Eric Holder is the most political man who has ever been the Attorney General. And he's running the Justice Department in a way that I believe is pretty much unlawful. He's not obeying the Constitution. He's doing what the president asks him to do, regardless of what it is. And now you have the two marching in lockstep. You have Holder refusing to produce these documents, Obama protecting him. Think about this, Kenneth. One of the things about executive privilege is, in contempt of Congress proceedings, if you are not protected by executive privilege, it can be a criminal proceeding against you. Eric Holder was saved from criminal proceedings by Obama invoking executive privilege. So now you have the two of them locking step and marching forward and going ahead and saying, we're going to try to prevent any production of this material, at least until after the election. And this is the problem with, you know, pretty much everything the Obama administration has been doing since the last election. When something is tough, when something is really controversial, anything having to do with the war. I mean, look at what they're doing with Afghanistan. They're pushing all of the questions till after the election. With Israel versus Iran, they want to push everything until after the election. With the debt ceiling, the next thing happens after the election. This is the same kind of thing. Obama is stalling desperately because he knows that these things, if they come to a head before November 6th, any one of them, pretty much any one of them, could lose him this election. And this is not just, I agree with you, it's not just a travesty of justice, though. It's a travesty of the Department of Justice. When you have somebody like Eric Holder who does not enforce laws with which the president disagrees. Remember the Defense of Marriage Act? They said, a year and a half ago, that they were not going to defend that in court, and they just let it go by. This is an unlawful approach to American law. This is a lawless Justice Department, ladies and gentlemen. Think about that. You want to know the 4 years of this? I sure don't. All right, coming back with Michael Barone and a whole lot more. Jed Babin for Dr. Savage, 800-449-8255. We'll be back after the break.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Savage tonight, and tomorrow night I will be back. But we've been talking a lot today about the choice of Congressman Paul Ryan as Mitt Romney's running mate. I think it's a pretty good choice. Guy's not perfect, but it's a pretty darn good way to focus more on the economy and some of the things that can be done to fix it. And we've been talking also about this lawsuit. The lawsuit filed today by Daryl Issa, the chairman of the Government Oversight and Reform Committee in the House of Representatives, to force Attorney General Eric Holder, our most lawless Attorney General, to surrender the documents on the Fast and Furious program. The documents, they number as much as 100,000, at least 75,000. Less than 10% have so far been surrendered to the House. The House filed suit to enforce their contempt citation against Holder. And unfortunately, this thing is going to go on for quite a while. It's not going to be resolved before the election. All right, we'll take one more quick call on that, and then we've got to get to other things. Let's go to line 7. John in Albany, New York. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeb. How you doing?
Doing good.
First-time caller. I
want
to talk to you a little bit about the Fast and Furious.
Okay.
I agree with you. I think this entire thing is a travesty. I believe it was nothing more than a con, as you had mentioned before, to try to enact more gun control laws.
Yeah, I think it's
one thing too. I'd like to bring up was, is before this came to be, I had read where the southern states that bordered Mexico were told, all the FFL gun dealers were told that they had to turn in their records to the Department of Justice for 6 months prior. And when I had heard that, the first thing that came to mind was, as a FFL dealer, they have to maintain records. They have to turn them in when they close their business. They have to hold them for 30 years. But there was never anything that I ever remembered of a dealer being required by law to turn them into the federal government.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that were going on through that whole program, and there are record-keeping requirements under the federal law for gun dealers, and a federal firearms licensed dealer has to keep records, and you know they obviously have to have the basic paperwork for a period of time, you know, at least until people get cleared and so forth. It's a very complicated and over-regulated industry at this point, but right now I'm just focused on this one thing, this Fast and Furious, and I think Obama is in a position now where he's pretty close to where Richard Nixon was on Watergate. He's trying to enforce executive privilege on a claim that clearly does not have merit. And the Congress is trying to get over that in federal court. My only problem is it's never going to happen until way, way after November 6th. So unfortunately, you know, this might actually go back into another situation. Conceivably, if Obama is reelected, God help us, if Obama is reelected and this lawsuit is decided, say, a year from now, and we find out that some of these things that Holder has been hiding implicate Obama in Fast and Furious, where are we then, ladies and gentlemen? Are we back to an impeachment of a president of the United States? I don't know about you. I really don't want to go through that again if we don't have to, but it may very well come to that. I think a far better solution, is just vote these guys out of there. All right, we're going to be talking in just a couple of minutes to my good friend about Michael Barone, who was fair and balanced before Fox News was born, about the Paul Ryan selection, about how things are shaping up in different states around the country. You know, this is the kind of thing that we need to really start parsing out, because at this point, it's still a little bit early, not very early, it's still a little bit early, but pretty soon, I think by Labor Day, maybe even sooner than that, the polls are really going to start having meaning. If you look at poll data on a presidential election, it's really hard to find stuff that's very solid before Labor Day, because at that point, after the political conventions, people start paying attention. People start really to think about it. Now, I can't believe, although I'm a political junkie, obviously, and a lot of you listening, I'm sure, are the same, you know, most of us would sit back and say, how could there be such a thing in the United States of America at this point in time, 3¾ years after Obama was inaugurated, and there could still be someone who is undecided about voting in the fall for or against this guy? I can't believe that there are such people, but there are. There really are. The polls right now are talking about something like 8% of undecideds, maybe more in some states. I don't know who these people are. They've obviously not been paying much attention. But normally, people don't pay very much attention. And in a presidential race, only 8% at undecided at this point, before the political conventions, that's pretty low. That is very, very low, because at this point in the game, you should normally have, I don't know, 30% for locked in for the Republicans, 30% locked in for the Democrats, and maybe the rest, up to 40%, kind of somewhere in the middle, because they're not really decided yet. Well, let's see how those undecideds are going to play out. Let's take a break early, ladies and gentlemen. Come back right in a minute or two with Michael Barone of the Washington Examiner. Jed Babin for Dr. Savage. Be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Savage, 800-449-8255. All right, right now joining us is one of my favorite political commentators, political analyst extraordinaire, Michael Barone, co-author of the Almanac of American Politics, star columnist of the Washington Examiner and Fox News. Michael, thanks for taking the time to join us tonight.
Hey, good to be with you, Jed.
Hey, it's great talking to you. It's been a while. Let's get right to it. Paul Ryan, at this point, as you look across the nation, does this play out right now as a positive or a negative for Romney, or is this just too much of a risk?
I think it plays out as a big positive for Romney, because I think that Paul Ryan is hugely gifted on policy, and he has good, sharp political instincts. You know, this is to some extent a courageous decision by Romney. People have said, you know, the fact that Paul Ryan has put forward plans and brought the Republican Party in Congress with him to address the long-term entitlements of Medicare and Medicaid is a political risk. I think that it has the material to be a big political plus.
In terms of some of the things we're hearing, I mean, it seems like the Democrats are almost a little frightened of Ryan. You know, you see the big headlines already in Florida. Oh, Ryan's going to be toxic to seniors and toxic in Florida. Is that a matter of the media getting ahead of the narrative, or is there something here that Romney and Ryan are going to have to deal with very substantively?
Well, Democrats have been used to running sort of stealth campaigns on Social Security. We're going to, you know, the dirty Republicans are going to take your Social Security check away and put grandma in a wheelchair and wheel her down the hill and into the lake. They've got an ad about Ryan going on now. I think that with Ryan's plan inevitably having high visibility, it's because it's been embraced by Romney, because he's been selected by Romney, and because all but a handful of congressional Republicans have voted for it, I think that it becomes very defensible, because Ryan is talking about not changing Medicare for people that are currently enrolled or are 55 years of age and older, and he makes the point, look, the government has made promises to people and they've based their decisions on it in a way that's irrevocable as they age, so we can't upset those things, but we can change the program so that it works better for the younger. And I think as that message gets out, you're not going to have panic-induced things by senior citizens. I think there's something else to think about here, too, Jed, and that is that the composition of senior citizens and the fear factor about losing your Social Security, I think, is quite different from what it was a generation ago. A generation ago, an awful lot of Social Security recipients were women, widows typically, who were receiving the widow's portion, which was a pretty small payment, and these people were pretty much up against the wall. people who go into Social Security these days, women as well as men, have enough work hours in the course of their working lifetime to get a significant Social Security check on their own. So you don't have nearly as many people living close to the margin on
That's
Social Security as was the case a generation ago.
Well, you know, at the risk of, you know, sounding too much like I'm agreeing with you, because I do, you know, I think really once the issue gets out there, I think an awful lot of lies are being told about Ryan and his plan. And you're absolutely right. There is no change for people 55 or older. There's no change in Medicare or Social Security. They get what they're getting now, and it's just the way it is. Let me push on to another little subject in that whole thing, Michael. One of the things that is impressive to me, and I'm reading the poll numbers, I mean, not as well as closely as you do, but it seems to me the number of undecided voters is lower at this stage of the campaign than it usually is. I mean, are people locking in on this thing earlier? I mean, frankly, I can't imagine after 3+ years of Obama that anybody would be undecided anymore. But do you see something in terms of the number of undecideds now, and how significant is it?
Well, I think that you've hit a nail on the head when you say that after 3 years of President Obama, people have pretty strong feelings for and against him, and that accounts for some of the poll numbers. I would say, though, that I think that we should not assume that all of the president's support is locked down solid at this stage. I mean, we've been through a period of what I call open field politics, where we've had big oscillations and changes in voting behavior. The popular vote for the House has swung in a 9-point range in the last three elections. 2008, the Democrats got 53%. Or 54% of the popular vote for the House. They went down to 45% in 2010. The Republicans went up from 43 to 52. That indicates to me that there's a potential for some change and some softening of Obama's support. And I think one of the things that may be happening is that this trash-talking campaign that's being waged in behalf of Obama, the ad where the steelworkers claims that Mitt Romney caused his wife's death.
Yeah, Joe Soptic, yeah.
Yeah, I think that can backlash against the president. Remember that Obama campaigned as the guy who was open-minded, who was tolerant and respectful of the differences with others, who was going to govern in a bipartisan way. That had a lot of appeal to upscale voters. And when you look at voters with incomes over $100,000, that group was 49-49 in the last election. I'm old enough that I grew up in Michigan, which was a kind of a class warfare politics in the 1950s and 60s.
Sure.
And the idea of an even race between a Republican and a Democrat among upper-income voters was something that was simply unthinkable in the America of the 1950s and 60s, at least in the North. South, you were still talking about an area where people were reflexively voting Democratic.
Sure.
Obama needs those votes again, and I don't think he's guaranteed them, and I think the kind of campaign that he's been putting on could boomerang against him.
Well, let's hope. Let me ask you, shifting again to something of a slightly different subject. A lot of people are saying, we're talking, first off, ladies and gentlemen, to Michael Barone, political analyst extraordinaire and one of the most gratuitously nice people in this racket that we are in.
You're a rat, Jed Beth.
No, I'm sorry. But, you know, it's just you need to say more things like that so I'll know that I'm home. Anyway, the point is the ideological bent to Paul Ryan seems to be a lot stronger than it is to Mitt Romney. Now, Charles Krauthammer wrote a column a week or so ago that he said what the Republicans really need is a stronger ideological race. Does this make it one? Does the injection of Ryan bring the ideological contrast that the Republicans need? Or do you see this fading away a little bit?
No, I think it does bring a real contest, a real contrast ideologically. And remember, when the term ideological is often used as pejorative.
Yeah.
In fact, it means based on ideas. Paul Ryan has, from the position of starting off as ranking minority member on the House Budget Committee and then as chairman since 2010, he's really been making policy for the whole Republican Party. His budget in 2011, all but four House Republicans voted for it, all but five Senate Republicans voted for it. He's been making, in a way, it's a backbencher or a middle bencher making policy for the whole party in a way that presidential nominees usually do. And I think that, over the course of the campaign, as Steve Hayes has made clear in a very nice article a few weeks ago in the Weekly Standard, Ryan Romney has been moving toward Ryan's ideas. And I think in Paul Ryan, we have the single best defender and the single best advancer of those ideas. I mean, he's gifted not only in public policy terms, he's also gifted politically. He's able to express these ideas in language that gets them across to ordinary people, in language that's persuasive, in language that he's honed through literally hundreds of town hall meetings in the first congressional district of Wisconsin, which, by the way, has been a Democratic district in presidential elections. Charlie Cook rates it in terms of his partisan voting index at 218, the middle of the House. Paul Ryan was elected in 98 with 57% of the vote against a candidate that the Democratic Party was pushing heavily. He's been getting more than 65% of the vote in that district, and he's been getting it the hard way by talking to people, by expressing his ideas and bringing them forward. His status as the VP nominee and his gives him a chance to use that ability that
he demonstrated
and to bring out those ideas with the single most effective spokesman for them.
Well, I hope those words all really come true. Michael Barone, political analyst extraordinaire, thank you very much for joining us. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Coming right back to your calls, more on the Septic Soptic ad. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage. Just talked to our good friend Michael Barone. It's really interesting. I mean, what Michael is saying is absolutely true, but it's unusual. It's very unusual to have so few people undecided and for having a young guy, a 42-year-old Paul Ryan is a young guy. He's the chairman of a major House committee, but, he's really not until recently, until he got elevated to the VP ticket, he really wasn't a big, big player in national politics. But as Michael Barone pointed out in our last segment, he has been setting the ideological agenda for the Republicans. I think that's a good thing. I think it poses a future for conservative values in the Republican Party, not just for the moderate Republicans, whoever they are, and who cares. The point is, we have a future for some conservatives in the Republican Party. Can we retake the Republican Party from the Republican establishment? Pretty tall order. All right, let's get back to your calls. How about line 9, Rick in Michigan? Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jed. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm one of your 8%. I am teetering back and forth.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, I'm so confused now. I need some education on this because I am not sure if I'm Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian. I kind of agree with both sides.
Let's parse that out a little bit, Rick. What do you agree with from the Obama agenda? What do you agree with that he's done so far?
Well, I agree with the point is that I believe that the Democrats will take care.
Wait a minute. Let's be specific here. The Democrats may take care of, pie in the sky, but what do you see that Obama has done in 3+ years and almost 3¾ years presidency? What has he done that you agree with? Be specific.
Okay, I agree. I think that one of the things that he's done is he's opened up the door for more of the working class people. Okay, and I know there's a lot of people out there that don't deserve a lot of things, and I'm not saying he's, the best.
Well, what he's opened up the door for them to do what? To go to the unemployment line? I mean, this is a guy who has killed jobs in this country.
Right, but a lot of these jobs, a lot of these manufacturing companies have reduced their workforce regardless of who was president.
Well, okay, but this is very confusing to me, but let's go to the other side. Now, what you say you haven't made up your mind yet. What do you like about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan? What do you like about what they're saying? What would make you vote for them?
What would make me vote for them would be the thing that I like is there's a lot of people in this country getting a free ride, okay, that don't deserve it. And I think he can change that.
Well, wait a minute. I thought you said you liked the idea that Obama was opening the door for poor people, and I was just pointing out that he's opening the door to the unemployment office for them and opening the door for them to collect more welfare checks. So I don't see consistency. I mean, what you're saying on one hand is you like people to not get a free ride, but you like what Obama is doing, giving more people a free ride.
Well, in my case, I believe he's still protecting me as a working, honest person. Okay?
What has he done to protect you, though? I still don't understand. You haven't said anything that makes me believe that you have some facts behind your assertion.
Well, I was working for a major automobile company, for one thing.
Oh, all right. You're a good UAW member. All right, that's fine. And you were helped. That's fine. I mean, I can understand that. The UAW and the pension plans of the UAW were the principal purpose of the auto bailout. What Obama did was to buy off the automobile unions to prevent the car companies from going through bankruptcy and thus escaping some of the pension liabilities. So, okay, I understand where you're going. I do. But that, why are you then confused? I mean, you should be a devout Obama voter.
Well, I'm not, because there's still a lot of things out there that I don't agree with that what he does is the handout.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, but what you're telling me, and I don't want to be rude, but with all due respect, what you're telling me is that the handout that you get because Obama bailed out the UAW pension plans under the guise of bailing out the car companies, you think that bailout is okay and that handout is okay because it came to you, but you don't believe that other people should get handouts. I mean, to me, that is a classic liberal condition. I mean, it's like Teddy Kennedy, my family made billions, I want to make sure nobody else does. You know, that's the dichotomy in your thinking is really troubling to me. And let me just respectfully suggest that the thing you need to do every weekday from now until the election, you need to listen to the show. You need to listen to Michael. You need to listen to me when I'm on. And you need to learn, because you are the issue at this stage. The undecided voter is someone we cannot neglect. But you're obviously someone who has strong beliefs. I, again, respectfully suggest to you, you need to read a lot. You need to study a lot, because I don't believe, as you've said them to me today, I don't believe that your facts are driving your beliefs. Okay, we've got to press on. Thank you very much for the call. Ladies and gentlemen, I would be remiss if we did not have a Joe Biden moment. Now, our producers, contrary to my earlier statement, we have found the Joe Biden moment of the day. Now, just remember, Joe Biden is probably living in fear of the date October 11th. That is the day on which he and Martha Raddatz are going to... Oh, I'm sorry. She's the ABC news host who is going to be the moderator of the vice presidential debate. But on that case, on that date, Martha Raddatz and Joe Biden are going to be taking on Paul Ryan. Now, Paul Ryan is a very, very bright guy. He grew up in adverse circumstances in that his father passed away when he was only 16 years of age. Let's listen to what Joey Biden said today. Hit it, guys.
My dad used to have another saying. For real. And by the way, I've been saying this for 30 years, and I'm glad to see that Congressman Ryan likes his dad, too, and quotes his dad. I mean that sincerely. But my dad, a lot of wisdom. Every time someone tell you, say, look, let me tell you what's important to me, what I value, my dad would go, no, no. Don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget, and I will tell you what you value.
You know, that's really close. Now, that's not the strongest Joe Biden moment we've had, but there's Joe Biden starting to mock Paul Ryan's dead father. He came so close, so close. I bet someone in the White House was just having a little bit of a heart failure, and somebody from behind kind of stuck a finger in Joe's back and said, Joe, shut up, Joe, shut up, Joe, shut up, end it. Well, I'll tell you what, it's going to be really, really fun. October 11th, mark it down, Martha Raddatz and Joe Biden against Paul Ryan. I would buy tickets to that. All right, let's press on. One of the things that we have to deal with is the viciousness of this campaign. And the viciousness of this campaign, I think, at this point, has been really personified in a guy by the name of Joe Sopcich. Now, Joe Sopcich, and you probably saw this commercial. Joe Sopcich was a worker at the GST or GSM, whatever it was, a steel plant that was closed by Bain Capital. And in this ad, which ran quite a while, several days, from the Obama Super PAC, this ad basically accuses Mitt Romney of causing Joe Sopcich's wife's death. Let's play a little bit of that ad, just to remind you. Guys, get it, please.
I don't think Mitt Romney understands what he's done to people's lives by closing the plant. I don't think he realizes that people's lives completely changed. When Mitt Romney and Bain closed the plant, I lost my health care. And my family lost their health care. And a short time after that, my wife became ill. I don't know how long she was sick. And I think maybe she didn't say anything because she knew that we couldn't afford the insurance.
Okay, wait a minute. Let's just stop it right there. There are so many lies in this ad that you really have to sit back and count them. And let me just review for you what the facts actually were. This is a guy who's sitting there. Now, this is a guy who is not just some random chosen person to pop up in this ad. This guy, Sopcich, apparently was really fairly deeply involved in the Obama campaign. And he was on campaign conference calls and so forth. But the facts are as follows. In 1999, Mitt Romney left Bain Capital. Okay. 2 years later, 2001, the GST plant closed. Okay, he lost his job, lost his health care at that point. However, Joe Sopcich's wife was still working, and from 2001 to at least 2003 or 2004, his wife still had health care coverage through her job. Okay, in 2006, she came down, suddenly diagnosed with cancer, and she passed away. Okay, so we've got a period of almost 7 years from the time Mitt Romney left Bain Capital, and at least 5 years between the time that the plant was closed by Bain Capital until the time this lady died. Okay, so we have this ad out there by the Obama Super PAC, and the real problem here is this is outrageous. It is going to be something that is bought and will convince some people who are not paying attention, some people who don't really care about the facts, some people who react emotionally. These kinds of very low, filthy political ads are a big problem in American politics, and let's figure out just how we got here. The reason we have this is two things. Number one, the McCain-Feingold bill. Okay, John McCain and Russ Feingold, two of the most liberal senators that have ever served in the Senate, and I say that advisedly. Everybody can call and yell at me, McCain's a conservative. No, he's not. He's never been. He's not been barely a Republican. But the basic point is he made this mess, and then it was made worse, well, in some ways, by the Citizens United case. The Citizens United case coming out of the Supreme Court said you can't restrict corporate advertising and the super PACs, I think, even predated the Citizens United case. But the problem we have now is the super PACs are out there and they are prohibited by law from coordinating with the campaign. So what do we have? We have this outrageous Super Sopcich ad out there, which has gone septic. Most people who are even close to being sane have condemned this thing, which leaves out, of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, who says, oh, I don't even know where this came from. I don't know where these people have, what their political affiliations are. Of course, Debbie, it's a Democratic ad. She finally owned up to that. But the basic point is, the Obama campaign and the DNC, they can say, oh, we don't know anything about it. We can't control this. It's really, really bad. And there have been some bad ads on both sides. Remember that King of Bain ad that Newt Gingrich's super PAC came up with? It was despicable. But it's the same kind of thing. And they're going to get away with it. And this is going to just get worse. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be the worst campaign you have ever seen, the meanest, the most lie-filled campaign that have ever been in the United States of America. And right now, we have no way of dealing with it. We're not going to be able to deal with it. But after the election, everybody's going to say, well, we're going to have to change the laws again, which they do after every election. I have a simple solution here. I don't want to see anybody saying, well, we've got to restrict free speech. We've got to restrict the super PACs. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. No, the answer is not further restrictions. The answer is lifting the restriction. If we lifted the restriction and said that super PACs can and maybe should coordinate with the campaigns of the candidates they favor, that would introduce a way to inject responsibility and accountability into this. If you can't duck away, if you can coordinate with this, Barack Obama right now won't say anything about this god-awful ad featuring Joe Soptic. If they had the legal ability to coordinate that PAC, that super PAC with the Obama campaign, Obama wouldn't be able to wiggle out of it. He wouldn't be able to get away from responsibility. That's the way to do it. Not restrict them more, restrict them less, and make sure that the campaigns are in a position where they can't duck responsibility for them. All right, we've got to take another quick break. We're going to come right back to your calls. 800-449-8255. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage. Gosh, I can't believe we've blown through almost 3 hours already. All right, let's see how many of you we can get to before we've got to close the show. How about Dave in Alabama, line two. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jed. I'm 60 years old, Army veteran, got a son in the National Guard, and I think that Paul Ryan is a breath of fresh air, a decisive and somebody that's taken a stand to do something. Last year we had 88,000 pages of legislation from a Democrat-Republican Congress, and yeah, that's just absolutely outrageous. That on the floor stands up almost 5 feet tall.
Yeah, I think that was not the legislation. Wasn't that the regulations passed by all the executive departments?
Yes, yeah, you're right. Okay. And, you know, we came from a 22-page document. For the last 100 years, the progressives took this country and ruined it. I think the nail in the coffin was NAFTA, GATT, and CAFTA. And, you know, why would, you know, even if you wanted a level playing field for the rest of the world, why wouldn't you want it for our allies? Why would you go to give favored trade status to China? They've drawn blood on us twice.
I know. We've got a lot of things we've got to deal with, and you're right. I mean, some of those trade agreements, well, most of them are good. A lot of them are not so good. And we have to just, again, get control of where we're at. Right now, things are in such a complete turmoil, and our tumultuary president causing tumult is Barack Obama. He likes to have it stirred up so much because so much stuff is going on, we can hardly keep track of it. Hey, great call. Thanks for it. Let's go to line six. Steve in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation, sir.
Yeah, Jeff, I might quibble with you just a little bit, but okay, not, maybe not.
Quibble away.
I'm a 40-plus year registered Republican. I voted for Bush in 2000. I think I heard you say something, you know, we need to get Romney in there and hold him accountable. I think part of the reason we're in this mess with Obama, this nightmare, is because we didn't hold President Bush accountable for non-conservative things he did. And
Romney slipped and did
some very non-conservative things, and I don't think we should wait until he's in office to let him know that he's, you know, I think this pick of Ryan was a good pick, but Romney himself, I worry about him, especially on foreign policy. Like I did Bush, I found some of Bush's foreign policy troubling.
Well, look, I am 100% in agreement with you, except for the fact that I don't know that we can hold him accountable now. I mean, Romney's got to run his campaign. He's got advisors around him, and he's not going to listen to a whole lot of people outside that inner circle. However, you know, two things. Number one, again, compared to the choice we've got with Obama, we've got to vote for Romney. The second point is, once he gets in there, I totally agree with you. When we had George Bush in here, he made a mess of the economy. I mean, to me, big government conservatism is an oxymoron. You can't be a big spender and claim to be a conservative. Also, and we can go on with this for hours, and maybe we've got to continue it tomorrow, the basic point here, George Bush in foreign policy was not very good. Yes, he responded very, very well to 9/11, and he gave a great speech to Congress a week after it, but that speech really died before it was born. And he claimed to say, well, you're either for us or against us, and we're going to hold all these nations accountable. If you're sponsoring terrorism, you're an enemy of ours. And then what did that end up with? Nation building. Neoconservatism, which again is a phony conservatism. George Bush ruined the Republican Party. Karl Rove and George Bush, when they left a smoking hole in the ground where the Republican Party used to be. And that is largely the reason why we have Barack Obama right now. You're absolutely right. So when we get Mitt Romney elected, if we can, and I'm not sure we can, but if Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are our next president and vice president, we are going to have to do a much better job. Now, I can claim a little bit of credit for trying to keep George Bush in line. It didn't work, but at least when he was going off on his neocon toots, I was writing saying, Mr. President, you're wrong. All right, tomorrow again, Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Got to break it from you right now. Look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow. We'll be there, 6 p.m. Eastern. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. See you tomorrow. Savage.